Good morning, folks. This is Mark Steiner. Welcome to good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Well, how many of you watched that debate last night is what I want to know. Or did you watch something else? Isn't there a football game going on as well? I think there was a football. Green Bay and somebody else
yes,
was playing.
Yes, I should have been watching the Green Bay. Green Bay Packers.
So
that's my team.
That's my team. No, it's my team.
It was your team first. I'm an owner, actually. Are you?
Are you?
I am. That was the first
You're
thing
not
I did.
From Wisconsin.
I'm not from Wisconsin. I'm from Oklahoma, but like, I got a job. It's the first thing I did with my little money. I bought a share of Green Bay Packers.
Really?
One share, yeah.
Oh, man.
All righty.
That's the voice of Denzel Mitchell, food justice advocate, farmer, educator, host and co-host here on the Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you in the studio again, Dan.
What's up, man?
And also joining us here in the studio this morning is Dana Moore, attorney in Baltimore City and member of the Baltimore City Liquor Board. Always good to see you, Dana.
All right. It's good to see you. Thank you.
And Ann McCarthy will be joining us shortly. She is dean of the business school at Hamline University in Minneapolis. And when she resided in Maryland, she was a Republican Party activist and ran for comptroller of the state of Maryland.
Hi, Mark. I'm here.
Oh, you're there already.
I am.
Hi, then. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. And we will soon be joined, I think, by Eugene Craig, who's third vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party and a activist of the libertarian bent in the Republican Party. So he'll be with us shortly as well. But you can join us at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can, that's by email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join us, 410-319-8888. So last night, we'll hear some clips a little bit later in the program, technology allowing. So I watched it. After watching what happened over on Friday with the release of those tapes of Donald Trump in the bus with Billy Bush 11 years ago, because he said it was 11 years ago, I was only 59.
I was 12.
Donald Trump.
we got, all of us were very curious to see what would happen in that debate because of those tapes being released. I'm just curious how you all think that affected anybody in that room or watching around the country, Dana?
I think it had a huge effect. My mother is my barometer, and she called me Friday night, are you watching? And she's 83. People that are right-thinking, that are moral, that are ethical, that are compassionate, that have respect for other, were mortified by it. What's most concerning to me is that it doesn't seem that Donald Trump's base was bothered by it. They feel that it was, that the Democratic supporters of Hillary Clinton are kind of doing a pratfall on it. But, you know, it was a very gross audio. It was a real insight into who Donald Trump is. My mother always said to me, when people tell you who they are, believe them the first time and don't try to talk them out of it. Hmm. And in that moment, Donald Trump showed us exactly who he is. And what was really chilling is you heard the conversation, you heard him popping the Tic Tacs, mm-hmm. you saw him get off the bus and then proceed to do exactly what he said he could always do because he's a star. So it was startling. And I certainly had an impact on me and the people that I respect.
But do you think Ann McCarthy had an effect on anybody who didn't already have an opinion and thought about this?
No, I think that his base is his base. They don't care. And I think the people who don't like him to begin with were disgusted by it because it is disgusting. And then I have to say that there are some of us who have fought our way to the top in a male-dominated society, and especially my friends on Wall Street, who say, that's not that unusual. I mean, in those male-dominated careers and industries, men talk like that all the time. We just find it disgusting. They think it's funny.
I'm in a male-dominated world. I'm a corporate lawyer. I've always worked in large law firms until I opened my own, played golf with some of the best and brightest and most powerful men. I was always felt like I was one of the guys. I heard all the talk. I heard the conversations. Very, very comfortable. You know, some of it is laughable. Some of it, you know, is cringeworthy. I have never heard talk like that.
What?
Well, That's because they don't talk like that around.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
Around women. But then, what were you going to say?
We get the tip of the iceberg. And I, by the way, I am not excusing him. It's totally disgusting.
No, no, we didn't hear you excuse him.
Yeah.
I want to back up a little bit because, you know, the train wreck for me started on Thursday with his comments regarding the Central Park Five and that fact that he didn't back up from wanting to execute these five children.
Back away from that.
He didn't back away from it. And he actually said this was the lowest and worst point in our American justice system that they received a $41 million settlement. So I was still stuck on Thursday. And so Friday was just a landslide to continue to show me how low the moral compass is of this individual. And I mean, I just think he's a despicable individual. And, you know, after Thursday, Friday, and then watching the debates on Sunday, everything is fair game at this point. I mean, he could be an alien from outer space, and I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. I understand.
I actually agree with that. His Central Park 5 comments were far worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that's not getting any press.
Well, white male privilege, maybe?
Well, I think some of it is that there's so
racism.
Much that he says that you kind of deal with what's most recent. There's going to be something else tomorrow, and we're not going to be talking about P-Gate. We'll be on to something else.
I think it's also our general culture. We're titillated by all that, you know, as I said earlier, personality cult.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think that you mean, as the producer for The Apprentice tweeted out, he said he produced the first and second seasons of The Apprentice. When it comes to the Trump tapes, there are far worse.
Yep.
Just beginning.
Wow.
Sure.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Eugene Craig, Republican Party activist.
I've heard that, you know, there are tapes where, you know, he's dropped N-bombs. There's, you know, tapes where he said far worse things than what came out on Friday in these Apprentice tapes. And, you know, the latest update I saw that somebody actually, you know, was willing to front the $5 million to, you know, get the rights to have those leaked.
Well, you know, I think we're going to be doing a whole show on this tomorrow just in terms of the rape culture, misogynist feeling in this. Mm-hmm. That you can do. And I think there is, I'll just say this real quickly, one of some more political things that happened in last night's debate as well, was that people say that men talk like this all the time.
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
Right.
I think
this whole idea is just locker room conversation.
But, yeah. No, look, men, right, men who, especially men who are heterosexual, do comment on women, way somebody walks, where they look. That happens all the time, right?
Well, and big secret, women do the same too.
Exactly. But what he said was beyond any group of men I hang around with would ever say. I mean,
that's why we like you, Mark Steiner.
I mean, he literally bragged about sexual assault.
If
this was any other arena, I mean, if he stepped back into the state of California, somebody would throw cuffs on him. Mm-hmm. If that was you or me, and we openly bragged about committing sexual assault like that, the second we stepped back into jurisdiction, sir, we're gonna need you to come with us.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
But the thing is that. This is, again, I think, really about the political divide that we have in America right now, which is pretty deep, that his supporters, you know, that doesn't mean anything. What means to them is Clinton and Benghazi. I'm putting my fingers up in quotes.
Right, yeah, air quotes, air quotes.
Air quotes, thank you. Her emails and you know, maybe her threatening the women who allegedly Bill Clinton had sex with, and there's been no proof of that either anywhere that she did anything like that. I mean, there's been hearsay and people written stuff, but nobody really, you know. So what were you about to say, Ann? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think Secretary Clinton missed a great opening. The very first question from that younger, since I'm old, I think of her as a young woman. she basically took them to task for being uncivil and name-calling and speaking to the lowest of the low. And what did they proceed to do for the next 2 hours? Exactly what she asked them if they would stop doing. And Hillary should have said, I apologize for all of that, and from this point on, I pledge not to do it anymore. And she would have won all of those independent voters over to her.
Right. The thing is this, all right, and I'm probably the furthest of a Hillary Clinton supporter in this room. You cannot fight dirt with, you know, Clorox. Like, that works in real life, it doesn't work in politics. Like, the only way she could fight Donald Trump at this point is to get dirty with him. That was the issue with every last one of our Republican primary challengers. Everybody went to be presidential with them, and here he's saying would be as dirty as possible to win this election. And, you know, that's where we're at in our civil society. Yes, it's sad. Yes, it's a bad example for the children. But, you know, if you're going to fight for the presidency at this point, when you're fighting Donald Trump, you have to fight dirty.
I don't know. One of the things that happened last night is she really didn't fight dirty. She's
on cruise control.
Yeah, she was on cruise control. She stuck with Michelle. When they go low, we go high. Mm-hmm. And you know what that did? That exposed Donald even further. Yeah. He looked pathetic. He looked red-faced. He was talking fast. He had that phlegmatic sniffle. he looked like he was, you know, body slamming his chair. He mm-hmm. was pacing. She was cool. The woman is a trial lawyer.
Right, yeah. Right.
She handled it. She handled it.
So let's play this clip. This is one of the things that's relevant to part of the conversation we're having now that we'll open the phones.
You called what you said locker room banter. You described kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. But this is locker room talk. You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning people in steel cages, where you have wars and horrible, horrible sights all over, where you have so many bad things happening. This is like medieval times. We haven't seen anything like this, the carnage all over the world.
Just for the record, though, are you saying that what you said on that bus 11 years ago, that you did not actually kiss women without consent or grope women without consent?
I have great respect for women. Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
So for the record, you're saying you've never
did
that?
I said things that, frankly, you hear these things are said. And I was embarrassed by it, but I have tremendous respect for women.
Have you ever done those things?
Women have respect for me. And I will tell you, no, I have not. And I will tell you that I'm going to make our country safe. We're going to have borders in our country, which we don't have now. People are pouring into our country, and they're coming in from the Middle East and other places.
Okay, so pouring into the country. So
we don't have borders.
Huh?
Yeah.
We don't have borders.
That you and that endorsement, I guess, doesn't exist.
So what does a man like you do, Eugene Craig?
Well, you know, I will be...
You're a Republican Party activist.
Yep.
Third vice chair of the Republican Party in the state of Maryland.
Yeah. Well, the blessing and the curse is that, you know, Hillary Clinton's going to win Maryland by 30 points plus. Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, every poll.
She'll win by 30 points?
Oh, 30 points. 30 points.
You really think that much?
Yeah. Literally, 30 points.
In the country?
Well, no, in Maryland.
Oh, Maryland.
In Maryland. So that's the gift and the curse. So I'm kind of free to, you know, do as I please. So I'll be writing in Governor Larry Hogan and for VP our national committee woman, Nikki Ambrose.
Creates his own ticket.
Absolutely. A ticket Republicans can be proud of.
Let's go to the phones, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts and ideas about last night's debate with our panel of four here on the Mark Steiner Show. And let's go to Joe, is it? Joe, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, Joe.
Hey, I'm not a Donald Trump supporter. I'm not a Hillary supporter either, though. I'm looking for someone to bring some justice and equity to American politics. But my question is, you know, what's the difference between what Donald Trump said and what Bill Clinton did?
Bill Clinton was prosecuted. Yeah, go ahead.
Finish what you're saying, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't really see the difference where, you know, all the Democrats whine and complain that, you know, this was, you know, chasing a ghost and blowing things out of proportion. I mean, if you look at them for what they are, their actions as a male, especially as for, you know, to be labeled a misogynist, I don't think Bill Clinton is innocent in any way, you know, or on a higher plane than Donald Trump is. I think we need to talk about that in relative terms because they're equal.
He's got a point. We don't like it, but he does have a point.
Well, the thing is this, all right, and I said this Saturday, you know, I'm a vice chair of the Republican Party. In the late 1990s, we literally impeached somebody, and I'm saying we as Republicans. You know, Republicans, members of the House of Representatives, literally impeached somebody over lying about something that was completely consensual. And yet folks are doing all types of mental gymnastics to try to justify something that's completely illegal and an assault on somebody, you know, somebody's body. I mean, there is no parity or justification here. I mean, there's no comparison between what happened with Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and Donald Trump literally groping and kissing somebody without consent.
And I found what Clinton did and his behaviors to be abhorrent to me. A grown man, she was a girl then, she was 18 years old, young woman, Monica Lewinsky, came on to him or not, she was 18. Mm-hmm. He was president of the United States and a man in his 50s. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he did was an abomination. If that was my daughter, I want to go punch the fool in his face.
Right.
I mean, you know, it was, you know, to take advantage of your child that you put in their protection,
right,
as she's an intern, that was disgusting. The
Why
behavior.
I agree. The theory of sexual harassment
but
unequal power. There is no greater unequal power than the president of the United States flirting with an 18-year-old.
Here's the thing. Bill Clinton had his
presidency.
He's not running for president. And I put on Facebook last night, I look forward to the day when men with zipper problems stop blaming the spouses of other men with zipper problems for that spouse's zipper problem. Hillary is not in control of Bill Clinton's zipper, mm-hmm. and she's not in control of Donald Trump's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
This is about Donald Trump.
Exactly.
And it doesn't make it more acceptable or less acceptable to refer to Bill Clinton. Forget about Bill Clinton. It's about Hillary and Donald.
Donald Trump.
Last night, before the debates on Frontline on PBS, they did some background, sort of the history of both of them. And, of course, they had Hillary with that famous saying, "I am no Tammy Wynette, stand by my man at home," kind of. And she even does the Southern accent.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they created all kinds of problems for her. But she is... starting right back, and then you're right. She has no control over her husband, but she has control over herself.
And I think she's
just dump him. Every self-respecting woman would have.
No, that is not. That's not necessarily true.
The same way
you just don't. You don't know what you would do if your husband cheated on you. You don't know what you'd do if your wife cheated on you.
Mm-hmm.
It's no one's business but theirs.
Right.
And you know, I can't blame her for any decision that she made. I can only, in terms of her marriage, that's nobody's business. It really isn't.
And
period.
Off the public stage.
No.
It shouldn't, but that goes back to what you have mentioned several times, Anne, is that this is about the cult of personality. You know, the fact that this is what we're talking about, rather than that there's a complete lack of clear statement of what of the policy that these candidates have, that's the issue. Right, that we're talking about sexual assault and not talking about the fact that Donald Trump can't answer a question about what are his policies regarding police reform, the environment, health care.
Where's Aleppo?
Where's Aleppo? Right.
Sherry Johnson, another deep shining light bulb. But let me go.
No knowledge of geography.
You have to fight negativity with negativity. She could have turned around this morning on the way in. Two independent tax think tanks have come out with an analysis of both of their tax policies, and Hillary could have said, "I have these two nonpartisan tax agencies that come out and say my tax policy is actually fair to the majority of Americans and will." Result in $1 trillion over 10 years for the federal government. She could have done that. Instead, she brings up the old stuff.
The issue is that it's virtually impossible to talk about taxes. It's virtually impossible to talk about criminal justice reform. It's virtually impossible to talk about rebuilding our cities and our society and our economy when my opponent is literally dragging out my husband's accusers and standing on the stage and accusing my husband of rape.
Yeah,
like, I'm sorry.
You think so?
No. I mean, I think she could have done the things I think Ann said.
There's a lot that she could have done, but there was only you can't respond to every lie that Donald spews.
I do want to go to the phones here
and
get some other folks. Our listeners are dying to jump into this. Let's get some thoughts.
This is
here.
A great conversation.
and I want to talk some of the policy issues as well. I mean, other things that came out last week were the transcripts of Hillary Clinton's speeches, part of her speeches to Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
They clearly showed her deep ties to Wall Street,
absolutely.
Which did not become an issue for just for a minute last night. Maybe it came up. But I think that that is not news because Trump trumped that news with his behavior. Right. But I think that says
Could
a lot.
Could you imagine
about
that
where,
came out
where
in
she
the
is.
Primary elections?
So let me 410-3 yeah, right. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
My question is, when the moderators brought up the Trump tape, and he gave his explanation, you know, locker room talk and all that, why did he finish saying to Hillary that she should be ashamed for even bringing that up? She didn't bring that up. The moderators did. That was the second time that he blamed what the moderators brought up on her. That was my comment.
I noticed that. I mean, but this is a man who's in a downward spiral, and you know, when you're crashing down to the ground and you are burning and you know it, you grab at anything you can to try to stop it. And his easiest target, obviously, is his opponent. And he blames everything on her. He takes no personal responsibility.
The thing is this,
I mean, as a successful business leader, an adult politician. I mean, I'm one of the youngest people in this room, but I can't remember watching an election, presidential debates, in which there's so much mudslinging, there's so much dishonesty, there's so much cowardice, there's so much menacing behavior. Like, this is unreal to me.
Well, I watched 16 of them over the last year. And
but
the
I
issue,
don't remember them any
they,
ever
oh,
being
no,
like
no.
this.
I played this.
Not like this.
Oh,
not like
crazy. The thing is this. Donald Trump, we're less than 30 days out from a general election, and Donald Trump and Steve Bannon are running another primary election. And the one thing that, you know, gets Republicans riled up more than anything is hatred of Hillary Clinton. So, you know.
But Hillary Clinton has not always existed. Like, she's the Democratic candidate now. But there are people in the Republican Party who are disendorsing their party, like top leaders, disendorsing their candidate because he's a despicable human being.
I mean, it didn't happen when liberal Republicans were at odds and the party was changing drastically in 1964. They did not kind of walk away from Barry Goldwater during the election. Because Barry Goldwater was a deep conservative, but he was a moral, principled human being as well.
You understood where Barry Goldwater was coming from, I think.
So, I mean, so I think that I've never seen an election like this. I've seen some hard, rugged elections in all the years I've been either alive, watching them and being engaged in them, or covering them here for the last quarter of a century. Or the time before that, which is more than the quarter of a century.
That other quarter.
But I've never. This is an election unlike any other election. I think that it's fueled by so much. It's fueled by people's fear about where this country is going. Mm-hmm. People are terrified about where this country is going. And I think that's not just Donald Trump's supporters. I think people are terrified across America about the depth of the racial divide, the economic depression people feel in their lives, about how they can afford with their future. Young people worrying about what they're going to be able to do and survive in the world. Can they afford to grow up? And they're going to be able to buy a house? Are they going to be able to live a life? Are they going to be able to kind of get through this? Mm-hmm. People are really in a very and we're living in a world that feels as if it's coming apart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that is the tenor, and it becomes embodied in an election like this, and their behavior is emblematic of that, but their behavior is like there's no mistake why the racism and misogyny are coming out, because they're the easy ways to scream about things because you have no answers for the others.
Yep.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
Very great question.
What'd you say, Anne?
Not unlike Germany under Hitler.
Right.
Or any other people. So here's a terrible symptom. In Cuyahoga County, Ohio, in which Cleveland is the largest city in, there will be close to 500 deaths this year from opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. Because there's a swath of people who are just full of despair and turning to other places to find some relief from that despair.
opioid use and overdose.
I think we need to take a break.
I take a quick break. Okay. I'm going to come right back and continue our conversation. We're going to go to our phones here. Alex, your next caller, we're going to come to your call, Alex. We're going to talk about some other things as well with the debate last night. Stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and let's jump into a clip here. From last night's debate, and then go right to the phones. Come back to our four incredible guests: Dana Moore, Eugene Craig, Denzel Mitchell, and Dr. Anne McCarthy. Stay with us.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail,
Secretary Clinton.
I mean.
No defending.
I will say this. This is probably the only point I would defend him on. Now, I don't necessarily think he should be the one to put her in jail, but if any other civil servant, and there have been, like, you know, instances of other civil servants doing exactly what she did when it came to regards of her emails and handling classified information, she would be sitting in Leavenworth right now if she wasn't.
She would never be sitting. Come on,
I respect
you a lot, but this is just partisan crap.
It's not.
There
are federal. There are former federal civil servants. There are former members of our U.S. military that mishandled classified information at a much lower level than what she did. That are currently sitting in federal prison.
I have a lot to say about that. I mean, General Colin Powell did the same thing with his email. George Bush, the president, deleted over 2 million emails. Where is he? He's in Maine or he's in Houston, Texas. Absolutely not. What Hillary did was not unusual, nor was it illegal. It was reviewed from top to bottom. Believe me, if that Republican
Senate
wanted to do something, if they had any scintilla, they would have done it.
When you have the Obama appointed FBI director come on and say that she grossly mishandled this information, grossly, carelessly.
That just means she broke felony laws.
But doesn't mean she broke the law.
That doesn't mean she broke the law. What she did was unethical.
That is what a court of law is for. In order to put forward the case, for her to have a defense attorney, and for there to be a prosecution, and for a jury to decide. And that's not what's happening, and I think that's what makes people upset. All of us can have our opinions about whether she should be in Leavenworth or she shouldn't, and she's just as normal as Colin Powell. But she herself said, I didn't take training about what's classified, I didn't pay attention to it, I thought my staff did it, and now she's like, oh no, I know what's classified, I paid attention. I mean,
and so your point is what?
I know they're all hypocrites, but she's really bad. Nobody,
okay, so she's really bad.
That's why people don't want to vote for her.
Well, okay.
That's why people don't want to vote for her or him. So
correct.
So who are you voting for? You know, who do you vote for? That's the question.
Can we trigger early 2020 elections?
Well,
Kanye's supposed to be running 2020.
Hey, I am the founder ready for Kanye.
Oh, that's outrageous.
I mean, but it was also, and I think that. I am not a fan of the FBI. Start there. I haven't been a victim of the FBI before. I'm not a fan of the FBI. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, to impugn the integrity of the man who runs the FBI on this political level is absurd. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not a Democrat.
Yeah, I am one of us.
He was appointed by a Democrat, but he is a law enforcement officer, very conservative. Probably dislikes Hillary Clinton intensely, and if they thought that she had broken some serious laws, they would have referred it to a U.S. attorney to have her indicted and put her on trial. It
absolutely
didn't happen.
Right.
Is this a man who could retire tomorrow and not worry about his retirement? He's not worried about his retirement. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a law enforcement officer, a conservative law enforcement Republican officer.
Right. So let's move on.
410-319-8888. And I don't want to be in a position to defend Hillary Clinton either. So I mean,
score one for the good.
Mark Steiner said,
"Alex, you're on the air." Alex, you're on the air.
Alex left.
Alex, did you leave? You gone? There is no Alex. No. So who do we have left? I'm looking because our screen's not working. Do we have? Is it James? James, you're on the air.
Well, Mark, let me help you defend her.
As far as the emails go. You can't, after the fact, say, this should have been marked classified. After the fact. Oh, we found 10 emails that should have been marked, but nobody did it. And that's their whole, if she had done something, like you said, they would have got the Attorney General to go, she'd have been locked up. Because it tells me, if you can't use your government server for private use, then everybody has a private email server. And as far as Bill Clinton not running for president, and it's not Hillary's fault what Bill did. Well, she should have said, I got my judgment day, Bill got his, and Donald, you got yours. So I don't know how people can say Donald Trump and president of the United States in the same sentence. As we got that. No, I don't think it's got that bad. So please, I'd be glad when November 9th comes so we can send Donald back to Trump Towers.
Amen.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Can I unpack that real quick? First and foremost, I mean, there were literally marked classified emails within these batches of emails that were combed through. The second part of that is that the private server, one, it was a gross cybersecurity threat. That's undisputable. I mean, nobody can dispute that. Secondly, it was unprecedented to have a private service, unsecure private server in your home like that. I mean, you know, it literally was the Clinton Foundation server. I mean, this is the server that Bill Clinton used for all of his, you know, current dealings. And so, I mean, it's indefensible. I mean, you know, there are protocols and procedures for, you know, working at home as a federal employee and using secure networks and using VPNs. She did none of that.
So I'm really sick of talking about Hillary's email. One of the things that, so I'm going to shift. One of the things that just really rubs me wrong was when Donald keeps talking about the African Americans and they all live in the inner city and I'm going to come fix them and I'm going to help them.
Law and order.
And that is a dog whistle
it
to
is.
Us.
It is.
We know that when he says law and order, he's talking about, I'm going to lock them up.
It's a dog whistle to his constituency as well, though. That's what they want to hear. That's what that's what that group of people wants
Speak
to
on
hear.
It.
So essentially, if he's the law and order candidate, then this is who we're going to vote for because the African Americans are running through the streets, running amok, dealing drugs in the suburbs, and so they need to be locked up. And so, yes, the dog whistle is at a very extremely low pitch for African Americans. And we hear it, but the people that are voting for him are hearing it as well, and they're saying that I need to vote for him. And that said, I was actually quite disgusted with the fact that the debate spoke nothing about police reform being so close to Ferguson.
15 minutes away from Ferguson.
Yeah. And nothing was said. And so when we're talking about law and order, well, law and order has got to go both ways, and that has not been an equitable conversation.
So I'm going to go back to the phones here, but Em, were you trying to break in to say something before we do that?
No, I agree totally with what you just said.
Okay, let's jump into the phones here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Ray. You're on the air. Good morning, Ray.
Point number one, very quick. For anyone, Democrat, Republican, Independent, to compare these two candidates as though they're close to equal, is clinical insanity. You know, this whole thing about, well, I don't like Hillary, or I like Hillary, I don't like Trump. You know, if Donald Trump, by a failed media, had been asked the same questions that Gary Johnson, better than that, Jill Stein, so she could answer them, had he been asked the same questions by the media, he could not have answered any of them. Your entire panel knows that. Everyone listening knows that. And we don't care. So we get into this unequivocal comparison of somebody who on paper, as flawed as she may be, no flawed than anybody else listening, by the way, is the most overly qualified applicant for what you would want this job to be. Second quick point, Donald Trump's rise is indicative of a corporate-owned media that has sold us entertainment. And for us, for smart people, to discuss a game show host with a vicious, just vicious personality against anyone that doesn't look like him, again, unfortunately, is just a gross waste of time, and it shows you how quickly, as one of your guests said, how we can collapse to a Nazi Germany state. Those are the only points I have for right now.
Ray, thank you so much. And let's get the caller in here and then come back to our panel. 410-319-8888. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I watched the debate last night on a high-density television set.
Yeah.
I noticed the sides of two candidates on the stage as they fly. It landed on Hillary Clinton's forehead, and she left it alone. She was very cool about it. And it landed on her blouse. Then it went after Trump, too. So it seemed like the fly was equally attracted to both candidates. That told me something.
All right, thanks, Tom. So before we go to our next caller, which we want to go to?
I was going to respond to the previous caller. And you know, a lot of what he's saying speaks to just regular, everyday thinking people, right? People who don't subscribe to this historical amnesia in America, though, that 24-hour memory cycle that we were talking about. We know that the political system is flawed. The two-party system is doomed to fail. Everyone else who isn't either conservative or, you know, progressive, liberal, whatever they want to call themselves. And at the end of the day, if we're only talking about two candidates because Gary Johnson and Jill Stein aren't getting any airtime or any other reputable candidates getting any other airtime or considered for this job, he's right. You know, Hillary Clinton is the most qualified because Donald Trump is the antithesis of being qualified as a game show host. So I completely understand his position.
The thing is, I absolutely agree with the gentleman. Me and Mark, we've been at this for, 2 years now, just with this cycle. The media literally created Donald Trump. You know, he provided the fodder, but the $5 billion in free airtime that was given to him during the primary cycle, there's literally a correlation between the media, you know, a shiny object of the day and the Republican polling of that day. You know, whoever, you know, Fox or, you know, CNN, you know, decided to talk about them during a particular stretch of time was who bounced up in the polls.
So, and let me get your thought on this.
So I agree that the media created Donald Trump. I mean, the whole primary time was disgusting. But by the way, how would you feel as Jeb Bush? Hey, Billy, cuz, you couldn't have sent me this tape while it was in the primary?
Hey, I don't think it would have made a difference.
Hey, cuz.
I don't think it would have made a difference.
Okay, and that's funny.
but I think it might not have made
$100 million.
Not with the people who wanted to see him nominated.
Who wanted to see him nominated, yeah.
Look, the thing is this. The majority of Republicans voted for somebody not named Donald Trump. Donald Trump won this primary with 35% of the vote. No more than, 35% of the vote, and playing to the rules of the party.
So, but clearly something is happening. We'll go back to the phones here. But, Ann, let me ask you this question first, and we go around the room because I'm curious. As a long-standing Republican, and as you are a young-standing Republican, a shorter span of time, a Republican, is the Republican Party imploding, as a lot of the press talks about at this moment, A? And B, it seems to me that Democrats don't know, or even though many of them are progressive and towards the left, do not know how to take on the corporatized leadership of their own party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you saw it with Sanders, but I think there's something going on here. But let's start with the Republicans. What do you think is happening, Ann?
I do think that the Republican Party is imploding, and maybe that's not a bad thing, truthfully. I mean, the Tea Party got a stranglehold on the Republican Party, and in its primaries over the past 10 years have pushed out moderate Republicans who worked across the aisles and who were reasonable people in exchange for people like Anat up in New Hampshire. And now and I actually trace it to the beginning of closed primaries. The minute the Republicans started pushing independents out of their primaries, they got further and further and further to the right, so that nobody but the very right now wants to be any part of the Republican Party. Have no suggestion on what to do about that, unfortunately.
The thing is this, all right? The Republican Party is imploding, and it's imploding for good reason. We're at a point in time where we've developed this base that, folk like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz play to. And, this 20% of the party, has, been very vocal and very active. And they've been the ones defining the show. They've been the ones calling the shots. What this election cycle is going to show is that America's changing. Demographics are changing. Ideas are changing. Perspectives are changing. And it's time that the Republican Party catch up with the 21st century. But what it's going to take to cause something like that to actually happen is a massive loss of somebody like Hillary Clinton get 400-plus electoral college votes, is a massive loss that causes somebody like Rex Priebus and all his cronies to not just be thrown out, but to be, you know, kept at bay for, you know, for the rest of their lives from any type of party leadership or party structure. I mean, this is, as much as it's the character, as much as Donald Trump is a caricature of the media, he's also a caricature of Rex Priebus, of Chairman Priebus himself. I mean, you know, the things that went down in Cleveland with the Rules Committee and the Resolutions Committee, some of the other committees, you know, it's laid out groundwork for another, a rise of another Donald Trump. But I do think the implosion of the party could prevent a lot of things.
Damn them open the phones.
So I keep thinking about Elie Wiesel and his comment that I'm paraphrasing, but one of the greatest sins is to just stand silent in the face of injustice. Mm-hmm. And his very, very often quoted, and I think I quoted this very early on when I saw what Donald Trump was all about. That, you know, first they came for the communists and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with, and then they came for me and there was no one to stand for me.
Right.
And we have watched this whole process. And for me, it began at the State of the Union address when the congressman from the state of Virginia who went to my law school stood up and called Barack Obama a liar. Mm-hmm. And maybe it even started way back on the first day of Obama's presidency when a cabal of Republicans said, we're going to make sure he's a one-term president. There is so much white rage. Everyone should read Carol Anderson's book, White Rage, because when black folks succeed and rise, there's this feeling of fear of loss of privilege, loss of power. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing. Donald Trump, he is he's a fiction, but he's a creation of so much people giving him a complete pass. I do think that the Republican Party is imploding. You asked about how do Democrats feel about how do we respond to the corporate power within our party. Money drives the campaigns, and campaigns don't exist without money. So we're never going to take the money out of it. I'm forgetting the name of the Supreme Court decision that essentially said that corporations are people too. I mean, I know that Citizens United. So, you know.
Let me do this.
You're fine.
Bernie Sanders ran a campaign with far less money than anyone, and he did a great job because he tapped a core of belief. Now, we can call, you know, I know people in the Democratic Party, and especially the Republican Party, that he thinks he's a socialist kook. But he tapped a core that I think the Democrats haven't come to, you know, sort of.
Right, but he spoke to real values, compassion, equality, economic justice, social justice. These are things that people can actually attach, or people like me can actually attach to. I could care less about the politics. I could care less about Republicans. I could care less about Democrats. I want to see children and families fed. I want to see people employed. I want to see killer cops locked up. I want to see I want to see an abolition of the 13th Amendment and a complete restructuring of our criminal justice system. That's what I want to see. And so, you know, if the Republican Party is imploding, where are those people going? Right. They're not leaving the United States. And so all their ideas and all of their money and all of their privilege that is practiced and held up in this country is still going to be here, you know, and you know, to today's date, the holiday that we're celebrating is an absolute representation of that.
It's Christopher Wallace Day. It's only Christopher. Right, that's
only Christopher. Right.
But state of Minnesota, it's Indigenous People Day.
Mm-hmm. That's what I call
as it.
Absolutely. It should be.
Indigenous People's Day. Let us go to the phones of 410-319-8888. Gregory, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Gregory.
My comment is, the outrage is there about Donald Trump and his treatment of women, but why isn't the outrage being amped up to, say, a Bill Cosby level?
Bill Cosby's not running for president. Bill Cosby's not running for president. We're talking about the presidential debate.
And there's been a lot of rage around Bill Cosby.
And there has been a lot of rage. His legacy has been completely vanquished.
Major white universities, black universities have taken away the chairs and the money the schools he's endowed. I mean, there's been a lot of pushback on Bill Cosby.
Yeah, but what I'm looking at is it's not being really amped up the way. I mean, you have Donald Trump backstage at Miss America's pageant. It's like having a bull in a china shop. Why aren't they going to talk to these women? Like the woman who say he forcibly kissed her on her lips. Why aren't they going after him the way they went after Bill Cosby?
I hear you. And I think that wait and see. I mean, this is not over.
Right.
Donald Trump has told us who he is, and it's on record. And what happens next, we'll wait and see. But in the meantime, we got to elect a president. And I want to speak to Bernie Sanders and the Republican Party and the Democrats. What this country needs is a lot more compassion, mm-hmm. and that's what Bernie Sanders tapped into.
And it was
beautiful. It's fantastic. And mm-hmm. when he joined with Hillary, I thought, okay, so maybe we're going to talk about some of the things that are important to us on a day-to-day basis. I have a grandchild. I have a grandson. I worry, can they go to college?
Mm-hmm.
Will the money be there? How mm-hmm. will we do it?
Mm-hmm.
These are the everyday things I worry, about. Food.
Right.
Food insecurity, it's a very, very real thing. Black lives do matter. Yes, all lives matter. But, I worry about my brother being on the streets.
We're talking about a good move that the Democrats could have taken. A great move would have been that Bernie Sanders was her running mate.
I thought
that would have been a great move. I don't know why that happened. Nobody consulted with me. But, it would have been much easier for me.
I can see people mocking the geriatric ticket.
But these are all old white people running for president. So what difference does it make?
The thing is, your typical VP is typically a technocrat that understands Washington and the needs of government. And Bernie Sanders wasn't that person.
Bernie Sanders is young in heart.
Yeah.
He is that.
Donald Trump, in response to questions about Syria, he said something that just is so resonating. He said, "We don't know about their love of our country." And you know what? This country does not have a love test for who we let in. We have a compassion test, and he lacks it.
Well, let's hear this. I want to hear this clip about Pence. But as we hear this clip, think about defining what you just said about what Trump said about Pence is that, when he said, when people say that immigrants have to become Americans, I can't think of any immigrant group to this country in the first generation that even begun to speak English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Germans didn't speak English until World War I. Because of World War I, they started speaking English. A whole communities in Baltimore and everywhere else did not. Mm-hmm. The only two groups in America that were forced to change who they were Native Americans. And Africans were brought to this country who were forced to leave their cultures and have them destroyed. Mm-hmm. Other than that, this has never been an issue, which is absurd. Let's play this clip.
Bingo.
Mr. Trump, let me repeat the question. If you were president, what would you do about Syria and the humanitarian crisis in Aleppo? And I want to remind you what your running mate said. He said, provocations by Russia need to be met with American strength.
Okay. He and I haven't spoken, and I disagree. I disagree.
You disagree with your running mate.
I think we have to knock out ISIS.
Look, Mike Pence doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's going to be my vice president. We haven't talked.
We haven't talked.
And one of the major issues on the planet, Aleppo and Russia. No, we haven't talked about our policies.
It's unbelievable.
The thing is this, we're just seeing one thing that you are seeing across the party is a lot of folk, wish that Mike Pence was at the top of the ticket.
Not me.
That would be
really
a lot of folk.
I heard a sigh from Ann McCarthy in Minnesota. Ann, go ahead, please.
No, I'm just he is too right. He is too right of right for me.
I mean,
he's a fascist.
Somebody put on Twitter that ladies remember that Donald Trump might be the face of your rapist, but Mike Pence is the face of the judge that'll let him get away with it. Kerpow.
He is a danger to women's rights.
Yes,
he is
totally.
And again, it makes me feel like I'm pushing for. I'm not. I'm just.
You're not.
So
it's okay, Mark.
there's just so much that's going on in this campaign that.
On the 2018, 2020. 29 days.
This caller's been waiting a long time. Let's get this caller on the air with us at 410-319-8888. CEO, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning to you and your guests.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Something was said earlier, and I think it's a very beneficial thing, is that a conversation has started. It's unfortunate that the two people, both people that are involved, make this difficult because of their personalities. But I would like to say two things where conversation has begun. One is on misogyny. I think that because of this, I don't think a person like James Carville, who talked against class and gender when he talked about dragging a $20 bill for a female through a camp, I think that would never be said again. Or it certainly wouldn't be said 50 times because they would stop him. The Democrats, I hope, and the Republicans would stop him on that second item. The second thing I think is beneficial is that I really started to think about white privilege. And white privilege really, I think, showed itself to me when the person from Univision was expelled. And I was amazed how Univision was being represented by such a white person. And then I started to look at MSNBC and other places, and Univision itself, everybody looks like they're from the Swedish ski team. So white privilege is deep, and it extends not only in America, but it appears through Latin America too. So these are two conversations that have begun. They've made me think about it, about what people say about class and gender and about white privilege, and I think that's beneficial. Unfortunately, once again, the two people that are promoting this conversation are such actors in their own right that it's not getting through as well as it could. So thank you. That's my comment.
Thanks so much to you. And there's been a lot of talk in Latino communities about racism and race in Latino communities. It's not you raise a very legitimate issue there. And
agreed.
Racism runs deep throughout the world.
You don't have to go far to find it.
No, not at all.
So what do we expect from here, do you think, Anne McCarthy?
I expect that we will, that even though this sounds Pollyannish, this still is a great country. We will make it through the next 4 years. And as several of my co-panelists have said, 2020. Let's just focus on 2020.
Very quickly?
Very quickly. This is a great country. It's always been a great country. It's a country of diverse peoples with different views. We do have some different values. Hillary Clinton will be our president in 2016. She'll be elected, and she'll probably be elected in 2020 unless there's some horrible thing that happens. I think that after the election, Donald Trump hopefully will exit stage left. And a platform will be made for us to unite and work together on some of the important issues that this country faces.
Well, a couple things. Hillary Clinton wins with 350 electoral votes. Republicans retain the House and Senate. We look on to 2018, where we re-elect Governor Hogan in 2020.
Okay.
I don't see a Democrat on the horizon is going to take on Hogan.
John Delaney.
I don't know that the Republicans are going to retain the Senate.
I think they will lose the Senate and get beaten up in the House, but not lose the House.
Yeah.
Denzel.
Stay in the streets. Stay in the classrooms. Stay on the farms. Stay in the House. And we all need to work individually towards education and compassion. I don't really care about this election at this point. I want to continue to see social activism, pushing the conversation and educating people. We need to be reading more, and we really need to understand the history and the politics of this country and how they affect families.
Well, I'm going to thank the four of you so much. Even though we didn't have a pro-Trump person on the panel here, we did have some real diversity in opinion, which I think is important. I don't know if I can handle the other part. We'll see. I know I shouldn't say that as a host, but this is just too much sometimes to even watch. When I see him hovering behind Hillary Clinton in this menacing way and the worst, it was just really unnerving. Dr. Anne McCarthy, Dean of the Business School at Hamline University in Minneapolis. Always great to have you with us, Anne.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much for doing this again. Denzel Mitchell, food justice advocate, farmer, educator, host and co-host here on the Mark Steiner Show. Thank you, Dan, for coming in.
Welcome.
Eugene Craig, grassroots activist, third vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party. Good to have you in the studio again.
Appreciate it, brother. Anytime.
And Dana Moore, attorney and member of the Baltimore City Liquor Board. And activist, good to have you in the studio as well. Thank you,
Dana,
for coming
in. Thank you for inviting me.
Staying with us, we're going to take a shift to talk about some very positive, interesting things going on in our community with two people who I really have a lot of respect for, Lavasha Dea and Fanon Hill, and the two women they're bringing with them, Ms. Shirley Folks and Ms. Greta Carter Willis. Stay with us for that conversation. Don't go away.